Listen, I do think there's a huge number of clinicians out there who know this stuff is true and is out there.
Yes.
But whether they feel they belong in the system anymore, if they think that way, is another question, you know, because it's not a system that does acknowledge or educates about meaningful disease.
Yeah, I had an experience recently with a patient, and I won't give too much detail, but who presented with wanting a whole person approach.
Wow.
And she nearly died with asthma and is seen as a high at risk person. And sure, she had very severe lung function and was palpably breathless in her consultations with me. And without going into detail, like, the history went a long way back, but she got serially worse in circumstances which had to do with complex family relationships. In-laws, and subsequently bullying in the workplace. And as we saw this pattern, it also became practical in the present, because she was feeling like at home that she was under huge pressure to get better overnight. If she'd only pulled herself together. So there was a perception in the family system that there was something about anxiety or stress. Then the other thing was that she was working part-time, and her manager was, she perceived her manager as bullying her to do more work, even though she was not well, and was obviously not well. So there you have the pattern, the echo, at home and at work. These authority figures, and this echoed way back into the family of origin, authority figures were expecting too much of her. So I said to her, well, why don't we find a way of you talking to them? And she did. She spoke to her partner, who was is a very kind person, and clearly to him on a Thursday, and she spoke to her boss on the Friday, who was very kind to her and understood. And on the Saturday, she had no wheeze. And in the 2 weeks subsequently, she hasn't woken up at night with wheeze. But she does still have some as yet unexplained residual lung function difficulty, and we have yet to see how that will emerge. But
I mean, you can get that with chronic asthma, can't you? You do get chronic lung changes.
Yeah.
So it's not either or.
No, it's not either or. It's not either or. And I spoke to her respiratory physician, and it was interesting because he said, oh, yes, I have noticed over the years, I've been aware of the anxiety, but I haven't had the time, which is the issue we were talking about before.
Yeah.
So he's a very, I think he's a very kind man, but and he notices stuff over time, but it's not part of his job.
No.
So he says, and that was, and then the other thing that he did was, oh well, she must have laryngeal spasm.
Oh, right, of course.
So he immediately went to a diagnosis that explained the change.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas I would go to the relational change to explain the change.
That's right.
So it's a really good example.
It's a very good example of the way out that doctors use to consolidate their way.
Well, exactly. But I didn't object to that. I wanted him to be on board for her.
That's right.
And I sent him a copy of the letter, and he wrote back a very nice response saying that this is a nice summary of her stress factors. Which, you don't win the war by beating the opponent into submission.
No.
I think we've got a long-term problem here. Institutions.
You just have to hope, don't you, that when you've rubbed along and worked with a colleague on a patient, that something's opened up for them.
Yes.
And that he's even writing that letter was his way of saying, you know, I see you and
yes.
the way you work.
Yes.
And, you know, it's
and
great.
And that's positive.
Yeah.
And that's incremental.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, we'd like the world to be totally different suddenly, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's
It's one person at a time, really, isn't it? It's the person in front of you.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah.
And that's all you can do. So, in trying to give someone who doesn't know what a whole person approach is, we've tried to do that today with an example. And I've got another example, which I saw patient that you handed over to me when you retired with chronic...
When I retired from the hospital.
From the hospital.
I'm not completely retired.
Obviously. it was a patient with chronic urticaria who you'd seen, and she'd had it for like many years, I think, 15 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd seen you twice, basically. And then she'd gone on to find a psychotherapist to talk to, and she had started to, she'd got better, basically, but not completely better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of asked her what happened, you know, what was it like?
Mm.
And she said, well, it was the first time that anyone had ever understood how awful it was, you know, how difficult it had been for me. And that was really helpful. And she could also articulate, you know, that she basically decided not to process an experience of breaking up a relationship, and that was actually what she had to do subsequent to meeting you. She had to go through this very awful experience of processing a breakup of a. And actually, when she'd broken up with someone, she'd gone off and she'd got on a real high. So at first it was wonderful, but she hadn't dealt with the very difficult part of it.
Mm.
And that was what her sort of hives meant. So she was able to say what the hives were meaning,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that was her experience of being in a system. And, you know, she'd seen doctors all that time. And they just got worse and worse and worse. It just sort of, you know, crescendoed without really anybody asking her about her story. And I think she'd been put together by you in a way that had been helpful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, interesting you use the word put together by me, but she was always together.
Mm.
She'd been put apart.
That's right.
By the diagnostic and management system.
And she described like going on for 10 years, really, in a kind of wilderness. Of, you know, thinking she had two separate problems, in a way, you know, that problem and then this problem.
The life thing, the breakup thing out there and the hives out here.
And actually
never the twain shall meet.
No way of healing.
Mm. It's curious, isn't it?
We made her worse, you know, by not listening to that.
Yep. It's curious, isn't it, how there's a magic, and I use that probably ill-advisedly, but there is a magic in just allowing the person to bring themselves together and see what happens.
Mm. And I think that is a huge relief to hear you say that, Brian, because I think as a doctor you feel compelled to do something.
I know. Mm.
And, you know, you've got to do something, and it's completely handicapping because you can't do something in that situation.
Yes.
It's not your place to do anything.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think if you watch doctors in workshops, and I've done this many times, and if you get them to do role plays and watch what they do as they listen, they immediately formulate a diagnosis, which is what the doctor's job is classically seen as, and immediately what comes surging in is the range of things they could do to such a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, somewhat simplistically, we would call it the fix-it mentality.
Yeah.
I'm going to fix this in some way.
Yeah.
So listening is a kind of, in the doctor's mode, is listening to for a pattern that fits a set of diagnoses based on the dualistic system. And then action man, rushing in with something, usually a medication. And of course, many times that's relevant. But I want to go back to something you said, or something I felt really, when you mentioned that patient for 15 years with an urticaria. And I noticed in myself two things. One, an anger, and the other thing, other bit, an inclination to slide past that anger. So what I'm saying there, the anger side of it is, how can we hear those kinds of stories and not somehow think, okay, that's not right, that, well, I mean, you were there anyway. What is it in the medical mind that is comfortable sliding past the significance of a patient's story? What is it that keeps us adherent to a dualistic system that in many ways has many strengths, but actually ignores part of the person? Why are we so dissociated? Why do we do it so easily? And I noticed those two bits in me as well, even after all the years of going kind of analytical about it, of kind of talking about it as a phenomenon that we have to grapple with. But more fundamentally, it's a violation at a deep level of our relationship with persons.
Don't you think as well it's an avoidance of pain?
Yeah.
Which is very human.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, when you do get down to the real issue often with someone presenting with physical symptoms, they've been avoiding a pain.
And you mean we're avoiding the pain as well?
Well, yeah.
Mm. You know, I do. I do, and that takes us to another bit is... a more fundamental bit, I suppose, of why do people avoid pain?
Short term.
Well, emotional pain. Mm. I mean, you can't avoid physical pain because it just is there. But emotional pain, you can, well, human beings seem to be able to repress or convert into something else or become analytical or cerebral.
Well, I suppose it's also whether you've got the relational resources to experience the pain.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the internalized resource or the one in the clinic room that helps you to digest what's happened, or the friendships or the relationships.
Yes.
You know, it's not just that person, is it, making an isolated decision?
No, I think you're really touching at the whole hard side and the therapeutic side of this problem, because a lot of our painful experiences that have contributed to the development of disease have their root in relationships.
Mm. And so do addictions.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, yes.
And you know, that loss of connection, a trauma, mm. yeah. Mm.
And most of our traumas are inside or around or to do with relationship or loss of relationship or poverty in relationship or trauma in relationship. So that brings us back to what does it mean after 15 years to have someone in relationship gently recognize you to the point that you can say, yes, it started when I got raped or when my father left home without explanation, or when.
Mm.
It is an infinite number of possibilities. Mm. So the relational aspect between the clinician and the patient becomes a crucial thing. A kind, empathic, interested, wanting to know clinician can bring the stuff out. And that same clinician who hasn't got a fix-it mentality can know that actually just listening to this is the start of a healing journey rather than I need to fix this if it comes out of the woodwork. Mm. We don't fix those things. We allow them to emerge safely and find a way with the patient, with a therapist, as in the case you mentioned, to actually explore that.
Mm.
What she said was that this was the first time someone did that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And we are.
She obviously felt got.
Yes.
From the first time she sort of met you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is also interesting when you think about what that skill is.
Mm.
It's not doing anything, is it necessarily? No. But it is listening
and, we can,
and being present.
Yeah, we can talk about skills and maybe we should.
Well, I think we're going to have a few podcasts. We're going to talk about the smorgasbord question. We're going to talk about skills.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about, you know, the obstacles and to mind-body therapy. But I suppose today is really just about what on earth are we talking about?
Mm.
And so we've tended to address whole person healthcare in medicine.
Yeah.
But I guess the implications of what you're saying go a lot further than that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Not only in our language, but in right through culture. But I was thinking as you're talking, one thing we haven't addressed is why on earth do we call it whole person? Whole is one thing, but just the person. And the reality, of course, is that when people come with suffering or disease or whatever and we probe the story always involves other people.
Yeah.
It involves partners and husbands and
wives.
Well,
if it doesn't, you'd start to worry, wouldn't you?
Yes, well, that would be a problem in itself. So it's always involving relationship, whether it's a non-relationship or not.
Yeah.
But, and so we're dealing with persons in relationship. But the language, if we call it whole person hyphen
relational
in relationship hyphen healthcare, it would kind of get rather ponderous.
Mm.
But whole person healthcare is the shortest way. But we mean more.
Yeah.
We mean families.
Yeah.
Tribes, systems. We're all.
And spirit.
Yeah, we're all, yes. Yes, and when even if you call it mind body, when I think of mind, I'm thinking of subjectivity. When I think of subjectivity, I think of consciousness. I think of intellectual and emotional activities and responses. I think of relationship. I think of cultural influence. I think of spirituality, and connectedness into the environment, beauty and colour and movement and so on.
Poetry.
Poetry. And, you know, these are just shorthand terms for much more whole approach.
Yeah. On that note,
shall we end it for today?
Thank you, Brian.
Hope that that was stimulating and interesting for you. This is goodbye from New Zealand for now. Take care of yourselves. You can't look after others unless you are also quite replenished yourself. So if you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or in any way diminished, please give yourselves what you need, because it's not just a one-way process. We're all becoming more whole in the way that we are trying to change our way of being in our practice. So goodbye. See you next time.